Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Tiger Bales with Let's Talk.
Welcome. Now I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations peoples right across the country. I'd also like to acknowledge elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service, across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, it's got a bit of heat heading towards Alan Jones, heading Alan Jones's way, which is good, with his stupid comments about needing another stolen generation. And then you get a stupid comment from that Minister for Housing out there in the Territory, the Territory Government Minister for Housing. What's her name? Price? I forget her first name. Bess Price. By gee, how could I ever forget Bess Price? Stupid comment from her saying that our young kids like jail. They need jail. It's good for them. They like it. Wow. That's a pretty sad sort of a statement to come from somebody like that, to come from any black in a position to in an informed position. She's got to be informed about these things. She's got to know about these things. And she says our young ones like it. She's a bit mixed up, where some of our young ones do see it as a rite of passage sort of thing, you know, and think it's good to be able to wear that as a badge that you've been in juvie. That is an attitude. That is a feeling amongst a lot of some of our young ones. But to make that comment that our young ones like it in jail, no one could really like it. Give them an option. Jail doesn't. It doesn't rehabilitate. It doesn't help anybody. Just gets them off the streets, out of sight, out of mind. And worst case scenarios, we see we go to funerals because they come out in wooden boxes. So jails ain't the place. They don't work. They're big business, private enterprise, and they ain't working. And I know a lot of young blacks that don't really like jail at all, but they find it difficult to change their habits, to change their lifestyles, and continue on knowing that they'll end up inside. It's moving right along, my guest, Scott Gorringe, talking to me from Canberra today. Scott, welcome to the program. How are you?
Thanks, Tiger. Going pretty good, thanks, mate. Beautiful weather down here and really enjoying my move into the ACP, into the other territory.
You were sounding fairly muffled in that there. It's a bit hard to... Let's see how we go.
Hard to pick me up?
Let's see how we go. And I'm picking you up all right, but it's just sounding sort of muffled. Anyway, tell us your mob, your country.
I identify strongly with Mithika. We're out around far western Queensland, around Windora and Birdsville and those three big rivers that fill that iconic... Lake Eyre, the Cooper and the Diamantina, and I belong to two of those. That's my dad, and that's where I grew up. My mum is Parkinji from down around Wilkenya way, and I'd love to get to know that mob and that country one day, so it'll all happen when the time is right.
All right. And you grew up on country? Going to school and stuff like that?
Yeah, Tiger, I was fortunate enough to grow up out home, Windora, and went to school at Windora and went to school in Corpy then and moved into the Big Smoke. But spent a lot of my early childhood with my family around a little place called Batuta, Mount Leonard, on a property called Mount Leonard. And fantastic people used to manage that place, the Lindsays, and we're still really good friends with them fellas. They're kind of like family to us now.
All right. And How do you describe yourself? What do you do these days? How would you describe yourself? A bit of a researcher, you know, you're an entrepreneur, you're all kinds of things. How do you describe yourself?
It's kind of like that. I think I used to describe myself as a consultant in leadership and change, managing change. Mm-hmm. I'm still got a real deep interest in that, and still do a fair bit of it through my organisation, through my company, Murray Matters. Yet now beginning to start a phase in my life where I think I'm going to get into some research, and I'm part of a large research project at the moment in ANU, Australian National Uni. So that's and it's probably one of my passions, the subject area, so which is deaths of discourse, or discourse that exists around Aboriginality, which is mostly framed in negativity. And I just want to try and shift that discourse and really challenge it.
It's a real obstacle for us, isn't it? The attitude and the perspective that people have when we government particularly, people within the system, within the establishment, and, well, I suppose mainstream Australians have this. They don't see us in a positive light. So there's a deficit, that they see us as a deficit model there. So it's a real challenge for us.
Yeah, it's a really interesting space, and the more I'm getting into it, I think the less I understand it. It's funny how that happens to me, but if I stay in there long enough, it kind of starts to make sense to me. But this discourse, you know, you're talking about how governments have been perceiving and seeing and having assumptions about Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islander people, and how mainstream Australians have these kind of same kind of perceptions. The sad thing about it is that we're starting to have those kind of perceptions as well. You know, you spoke about Bess Price talking about Aboriginal boys or girls or whatever kind of like in jail. Well, that's part of the discourse that's infiltrating Aboriginal minds, and that's where, you know, we become the oppressors. We oppress our own self, which is a really sad and scary at the same time. I think it's been happening for a fair while, and there's some really deadly people doing some good work around this. And, you know, Chris Sarah has been at it for a long time, and there's other fantastic people right across Australia working in schools and working in organisations that are rejecting this discourse and kind of not, in some ways, some people don't understand what they're doing, but what they're doing is just deadly stuff. And what I'm trying to do, I suppose, in this research project is trying to put some words or some frames or some understanding around what's happening, and then how do you shift it, and then how do you maintain the shift. So, it's an interesting space.
So would it be fair to say that this deficit discourse, I'm not too sure what this discourse means, but the deficit aspect of it, means that they don't see value in our culture, in our mob, in where we've come from, who we are, what we do, what we've got to bring to the table. We're looked at as if we've got nothing. We're just welfare recipients or someone there with their hand out, but with nothing to give, bringing nothing to the table. When, I mean, our history, our culture, we're the first people on the planet. Full stop, you know. We must bring something to the table.
Yeah, I think that's all part of it. I'll just quickly read a little bit about you said you're not real sure what this discourse means, and some of the listeners might be struggling with it as well. But there's a quote from a person by the name of Kieran. I think he works here in ANU, and this is how he talks about discourse.
Mm-hmm.
The discourse has been described as a system of thoughts composed of ideas, attitudes, courses of action, beliefs and practices that shape reality, by the systematic constructing of subjects in the world of which they speak. So it's how everything shapes the reality of, in this case, Aboriginal people. So how people think and view and how they and what they do and everything about us. And it plays a role in wider societal processes of legitimation of power, and it's maintained in the power relationships. Mm-hmm. So it's maintained in government, it's maintained in media. Mm-hmm. You talked about Alan Jones there before. You know, he's a person who's got a radio show where nobody can cut him off. He can talk as much as he wants and say what he wants. And he gets into he's in a position of extreme power and saying stuff that he wants to talk about. And it's maintained by people in power. So it's and the deficit, of course, is the same sort of stuff that this fellow was talking about is, you know, he's framing aboriginality in a deficit or a negative frame. Mm. And there is no way out when you do that. There is no way out. The only way out of it is to not engage in it. So as soon as we start replying to people like Alan Jones, as soon as we start standing up on Facebook and all that sort of stuff and rejecting what he's saying, we're giving his comments power.
Yes, giving him oxygen. Giving him oxygen. Mm. Yeah. So what do people do?
Engage in a different conversation, I think, Tiger. You know, instead of engaging in a debate
headbutton and stuff. Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Just change the conversation. Talk about other stuff. Talk about the stuff that we're doing really well. Focus on the strengths that exist in our mob. Focus on all the knowledge that exists in our people and all the deadly stuff that our organisations and our people are doing out there. And not only our people, there's some fantastic people that are not Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander that are doing fantastic work with us. And you know, it's really recognising that kind of stuff and how we work together. Like we've got, you know, the comments like Jones sort of brings into this space is something that divides us. We've got to look at this, you know, diversity that we have in our organisations and our people and across Australia and use it as something that unites us and not divides us.
Mm. One of our big traps is engaging on white terms of reference. We need to be sticking to our own terms of reference. Well, we can talk from a cultural base and a cultural background and our cultural knowledge and expertise. Black terms of reference is something that we've got to, I think, is what we've got to do. What are your thoughts on that? You thought about that at all, like the white terms of reference and black terms of reference?
No, I tend to agree with you. I think I strongly agree with you. The challenge, I think, is really understanding for ourselves what we're talking about when we say black terms of reference and white terms of reference. You know, and I've seen it quite often. You know, we talk about Indigenous knowledges and Western knowledges and these systems that we work in. And if we got a collective understanding of what we're talking about in that space, I think it's really powerful. If we don't, have a collective understanding of what we're talking about in that space, where you know the assumptions are really clear on what we're talking about, I think then it becomes a little bit problematic for us all in trying to identify what it is that we're talking about and how we want to move forward with some of the really complex issues that we're facing.
Mm. Some of these complex issues require discussion on the ground amongst our mob, lobbying government, lobbying the opposition. A lot of times our mob, and I'm guilty of it, haven't bothered to go near the opposition, which is stupid. I mean, they've probably got more power than the government in presenting your case. If you've got a question about something or a concern about funding being cut for health or health promotions or whatever it might be, we've got a better chance of putting that up, of the opposition taking that up for us by asking questions in Parliament. So my point here is we need to be doing more of this, more lobbying, strategists. We need to be strategic, and that's something I don't see a lot of at all, Scott. What are your thoughts there? Strategy is something big, and the lobbying amongst our own mob, the talking amongst our own mob, but lobbying government and lobbying the opposition. Tell us your thoughts.
Again, it's a good point to raise, and it's kind of like there's a strategic approach to it all, yet there's a relationship that needs to be built with both sides. I'm a strong Green supporter in the way that they've structured some of their policies, and some of them I don't agree with, but, you know, there's the Greens that are really strong in this space as well, and of course the Independents, and it's how we build those relationships across all these power positions, I suppose, because that's where the big decisions are being made, and how we use our knowledge and our strength in that space to lobby for the things that we require and that we see are going to be really strong for our mob. So, yeah, I strongly agree with what you're trying to say there, mate.
Yes, no, the relationship is the key thing. That's the bottom line, or the ultimate objective is to establish good relationships with people. And where there's reciprocity, you know, it's not just a one-way relationship.
And I think one of the challenges that we have, and we've been kind of socialised into this space as well, Tiger. Now, I'll go back to the depths of discourse stuff again. You know, we frame all of our approaches in the deficit, where we've got to tell the government, we've got to talk to the government, we've got to talk to government agencies and those type of people, tell them how bloody bad we are off, you know, how much we're struggling, how many our mob in jail, how many our mob not complete in year 12 or whatever. We've got to, and how many our people got diabetes. We've got to give them all the bad news before they even consider supporting us. And so it puts us into, this is the deadly thing about this. When I say deadly in this context, I mean the bad thing about it is that it puts us into the power place where we have got no power, because we're going to these people with our hand out, saying help, help, help.
Cap in hand, yes.
Yeah, and it positions them in this position of power where they think they have all the answers for us. And that's never ever been challenged, that kind of stuff, in a way where it's understood clearly by everybody in that space. And, you know, we walk away thinking, oh, yeah, we're okay now. But then we look around and they're doing something different, and then we get cranky at them for doing something different. But for me, the deeper conversation hasn't been had. And it's this one around how people, how we all participate in this discourse of deficit that frames Aboriginality as a negative, in a negative way. We say, you know, like I was saying there before, you know, when you were talking about it at the introduction of this little section, you know, so many are people in jails and, you know, and, yeah, that's not denying the challenge that we have there. But, you know, when we start to frame our solutions, we need to shift into a more positive way of working. It's really tricky. Even the, you know, I'm having trouble talking about it. It's a really tricky space.
Yes, and we've got to be mindful of our language and how we talk about it too, as well. Because, like you say, we're doing it to ourselves a lot. the deficit model stuff, the deficit stuff, by not bringing forward our achievements and how well, what works and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And we go cap in hand and say we want more money, when in fact, I've said it on numerous occasions, I think there's enough money on the table out there already. It just needs a review and a refocus on where it's being spent and where it may be spent, where it could be spent.
But
there is a need in some areas for more money, but by gee, there's a lot of areas where we could be spending what's out there, spend it better, put it in, get better outcomes.
And I tend to, you know, look around and see a whole lot of these projects and programs that are being run, and I think, you know, that's pretty deadly what they're doing, or the thinking around it, that put all this stuff together, and some fantastic, you know, very bright people put a lot of effort in shaping those programs and projects, and I think that's really cool. And then I have a look at some of the results, and then I have a look how they're going about and the approach they're putting to it, and most of it's granted in deficit again, and they're wondering why they're not getting any real traction around this stuff. Yes. Now we see the closing the gap agenda. Ever think about for all the listeners out there? Think about what that means, closing the gap. For in my mind, that's a deficit agenda. Even though the intent is really positive and strong, and I think we're seeing the results in the latest report. You know, nothing shifting significantly because of some of the approaches that people are putting to this. And it's not the programs. You know, quite often now the government will come along and probably throw out the programs. Well, no, don't throw them out. Just think about them differently and implement them in different ways.
Yeah.
Engage with people. Don't do things to them or for them. Do things with us. You know, it's pretty simple in some ways, but it's really hard because what you're dealing with is power and identity.
Yeah. Yeah. So this research, this research project, how long is it? And is it covering New South Wales? Is it a national thing? Tell us a little about it.
Yep, well, we're looking at, I'm at the moment I'm based out of the National Centre for Indigenous Studies at ANU, and Mick Dodson is the director. And what we're looking at is a three-year project. We're 1 year into it, and it's looking at three programs. One is Learning on Country, which is up in the Northern Territory, where they're doing some really nice stuff with in the Aboriginal communities up there, where they're focused on ranger programs and they're getting students on ground, on country, learning about the science, learning about literacy and all that sort of stuff through their country and the knowledge of their country. So it's grounded in the strengths that these Aboriginal local mob bring to their country. So that's one of them. And the other one is the Stronger Smarter program with Chris Zara. They've been doing fantastic work over the last 10 or 12 years around how you engage better with Aboriginal students and Aboriginal parents from a school point of view, from education, real strong focus on education there. And the other one is the Nguri process that I run through Murray Matters, and we've been working with some schools across the ACT and into New South Wales as well. So it's based on a strength-based approach. So it's focused on what keeps you strong and what makes you strong. And it's really interesting when me and my best friend who designed it, David Spillman, when we were starting to really understand what we were doing in it all, as most things, Tiger, you learn as you go, and we learnt that the questions that we were posing and asking to our participants were getting them to focus on how we are as opposed to who we are. And this, just that little thing really shifted the way that I think about identity now. And in some ways, I think the focus on identity becomes a distraction and can separate. And in this way, and these are challenges for our listeners, I suppose, because the first time talking on radio about it, and I'll just tell you how it all come about for me. I focus on how I am. It's not that I don't think identity and who I am is not important. I think it's critically important. I think it's essential for any human being to understand who we are. Yet, if that's where we start our conversation, it sets up a separatism in some kind of way, straight up, because as soon as I talk about who I am, I've got to talk about who you are and who you're not. And it sets up this difference between us, and mostly the difference is framed in a deficit. Either
that's right,
I've got this in
somebody
you
haven't. Short of skills here, yeah. Or knowledge there, or material possessions or something, yeah.
Yeah, yes, it's just a human thing that we slide into. So where I focus on, and in the guru process, this is where I get people to really focus on, is how we are, how I am with me, how do I treat myself, how do I talk about myself, how do I think about myself, and how I am with others. What's my relationship like with the people alongside of me and who I work with in my family? Is it strong? What's going on in there? How am I behaving in it? And then how I am with country. On whichever country I'm on, how am I participating in this place? How do I honour this space? How do I look after country? And how do I be in it? And if I get those three things right, the who I am emerges.
Yes.
And that's the essence of me. And then if I move into a different space, like I move from Queensland into Canberra, well, I've got to learn how I need to be in this space. So my identity in some ways shifts a little bit because I'm different down here, because who I am is a little bit different, or how I am is a little bit different than when I go back on country back out to Windora. So I sort of look at this thing as, you know, culture. We're all multicultural. We're socialised into a whole heap of different cultures, in our family culture, in our work culture, in our Aboriginal culture, in our Australian culture. Some of those connect, some of them don't. But we make the choice whether we stay in that culture or not. And if culture is contextual, therefore my identity is contextual. So the how I am is the only thing that I have really got strong control over, how I want to be. And if I get those things right, I think I'm going to be okay in most places, in all places.
Yeah.
So that was a long-winded thing, but basically I'm focused on how I am, not who I am. Not the who I am emerges, and who I am is critically important, but it's not where I start my conversation.
Yeah. Now that's very interesting, very interesting. And I like it. I like it, yes. It's a good one. All right. We might take a break for a song and come in and talk about your people. Got a land determination, native title determination not that long ago?
Yeah. That'd be fantastic.
We might
talk
about that and see what challenges there you've got, because a lot of our mob seem to think that, oh, it's all right, we're right now, we've got the land, we've been recognised. We don't need to do any more. We'll just leave a country go wild. But that's where the work, that's the first stage of getting to that determination and being recognised and told what you can do and what you can't do. But the second stage is get out there and do something. We'll talk to you about that anyway. You might have different views on it, your people, your mob. We'll talk to you when we go after this song. Scott Gorringe is my guest. Scott's a Mithika man, up around Birdsville, Quilpie, Windora, all that country up there, a place I haven't been, but I reckon it'd be a beautiful country. So, Scott, you got your people. Was it Mythica Mob that got the land determination?
Yeah, Todd, we got, it took us about 12 or 13 years to get our determination out on country. We celebrated out there in October last year. It was a fantastic occasion. I listened to that version of old Slim's song, Rain Comes Down in July, and it reminded me of my old father and my old Bill Grimes. And, yeah, I'm pretty sure he would have been smiling down on us out there in October, and if we finally got to a point where we can celebrate our native title determination.
What's the biggest thing, best thing, most important thing for you as a Mythica man sitting there amongst your mob and being told after a 12 or 13 year struggle, being told that certain parts of that country there is you've got access to and you've got you can do certain things. How does that feel for you? So how did it feel sitting up there after a 13-year struggle? And, you know, you talk about your old dad up there, he'd be smiling down, watching things. How'd you feel on the day?
Interesting question. A whole lot of emotions are going through me now. I was just kind of thinking about that moment when the judge handed down the decision at on country at Woondora. And I was really emotional. I got up to thank everybody for coming and thank the judge and Queensland South Native Title for the work that they've done. And I struggled getting through it because I was remembering Dad, Mum. I was remembering my old brother Johnny and sister Peg and Bowie and Harry and all them fellas that we lost along the way and before, my nephews, and I was remembering all those people that weren't there physically with us, but I'm sure they were there in spirit. And because I suppose where we are as Gorringers out in our country, we have really strong relationship with the graziers out there, so we could get access to the things that were really important to us whenever it kind of worked well for us. And that relationship, I don't think, has shifted. We've still got strong relationships with the graziers, so and the councils out there. So it was more of the remembering and of the people past, I think, Tiger, and our knowledge that the knowledge that we had, the collective knowledge that we had just then with all us Mythica people in that room, to say, we got there now. This is recognised officially in Australian law, not only in Mythica law.
Yeah, right.
Mm.
Yeah. So what does it mean to you now? What do there is an attitude among some of our mob that job's done, we can sit back, and others say, no, there's lots of things we can do. Some of that can be kept for cultural, sacred, whatever it might be, you know, and there's other stuff there that we might be able to do something different with. What's the plans for – where do you go now? What's post-native title mean to you?
Yeah, and I think this is the most critical. You know, we spent 13 years getting to that point, and for me, it's just that's the training for the season in some ways, because we've put in the hard work to get consent determination, and now we've got to shape our future. We've got to shape Mythica future out our way. And we got a very, very significant area in Australia that we need to care for and continue caring for, like we have done for years. And the relationship that we have with our neighbours, our traditional owners out there with the Wonkanguru, the Wonka Mudla, and the Buntamara, and the Wonkamara, and, Kalalee, and there's a whole heap of different mob out there that we got to stay really strong with. continuing building our relationships, because we need to care for all the country together, like we used to, like we have been right up until now. It's just shifted now because there's other things at play. You know, there's the economic development opportunities from other people that want to play in our space as well, through mining companies and, you know, the graziers want to continue grazing cattle and all that sort of stuff out there. And we're supportive of all those sort of things. We just need to build a different relationship now, because we're in a different position. We're in a completely different space. We've got a prescribed body corporate up now with directors and all those in charge. So we've even got a different structure where we're trying to make decisions within. So it changes so dramatically after native title. And we're at the moment, you know, in this space of not knowing in our legal ways. It's pretty scary and it's pretty big and most important. So we're trying to build, you know, mythic nation in some ways, and I don't know whether it's build mythic nation or connect it all again, you know, because it's been so. You know, spread out.
So disconnected, eh?
Yeah. So disconnected for a long time, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. With the determination, Scott, any money for the economic development or for the management of the land from the government as part of the package and the recognition? Or is it just, yes, we recognise that you're the traditional owners of this particular area of land and you're able to hunt, fish and gather or whatever, do this, do that? And that be it? Or is there, I mean, for a complete package, there should be some sort of developmental fund part of this. Would that be the case?
Well, we've got some land given back to us for our use. You know, we've got a reserve given back and all those little things, little blocks of land in and around Windora and some of the reserves that were handed back.
All right.
But it's a pretty big country out there, Tiger, and... You need a lot of land if you're going to make any significant living off it. But where it does position us, I think, when we're developing these eluas, and it sort of puts us into a fairly strong position now where we can build some a pretty strong economic base as well as a cultural base for mythic out that way. You know, we're looking at how do you use all the research that was done in the native title process. There was a massive amount of research went into Mythica around getting us our determination. How do we use that information now to project us into the future?
And so there'd be some valuable information in there in that research, like a lot of work being done, you say?
Oh yeah, and some fantastic stuff, you know. And from people years ago, you know, like all the old anthropologists and all those sort of people, they've done some great stuff. And you know, Elkin and old recently had a bloke by the name Paul Gorecki working with us, and he's unearthed a whole heap of different stuff as well, which mixed with the knowledge that we have of our country and of our history, becomes really powerful. You know, one of the things that we've discovered in all this over the past 13 years has been a body of work that was done by an old grazier on a property out there called Moorabri. And Alice Duncan Kemp was her name, and she wrote a lot of books. And there's a massive amount of cultural history in there, as well as language and stories, as well as the history of when Whitefoot had first come into the Napier Basin area around our country. And the channel country we call Kirindir. So, you know, this
What we're trying to do is how do we pull all that information together to try and shape our future, not only in economic development opportunities. We want to ground it in something that's really strong mitigator, that when we make decisions around economic development on Mythica country, we want to ground it in Mythica knowledges. Mm-hmm. We want to be the authority of that knowledge and not Alice Duncan Camp anymore, or not Alcan anymore, not Greki anymore. We want Mythica to be the authority of Mythica knowledge. And it's a funny process, that native title, and it's the only thing we've got to work with, and it's worked for us. We've got a consented day on the nation. But it's a funny thing because we give all the knowledge to these people. We're the primary source. And then it turns into this research that's kind of not ours anymore. When we went through the native title process, they used all that information to verify whether we were from that country and who our family was and all that sort of stuff. So it kind of become not ours, and all we're trying to do now is we want to be the authority on that knowledge again. We use it for that purpose, to get our native title. Thank you very much. Now we want the authority on that knowledge now. Mm. And it's shifted into this other space. So we want to ground our development, our economic development, our social development, our cultural development in Mythica knowledge and our decision-making processes. Mm. It's a really exciting time. I'm just pumped around where it can take us, but there's a lot of work to be done to try and get there.
Will there be any resistance in this discussion, in this move to sort of reclaim that knowledge and that's been gathered and written and recorded and what have you? Is there this? I would think this is probably one of the first times that this has been suggested and has dared to be suggested, I would say, in white superiority terms. Is it? Yeah, well, is it the first time? And do you think there's going to be a? Do you think there'll be a some resistance here?
No. Well, not that I've experienced so far, Tiger. What I'm experiencing is a whole lot of support for it to happen.
Good one.
I've spoke to our PDC event, our board of directors, and they're really keen for this to happen. So in all this. Because I've got contacts across the research area. I've spoken to some people in the research area around ANU and other universities, and we're trying to put together now a research project around it where we can use the Duncan Kemp stuff, Alice Duncan Kemp stuff, all the books that she wrote. Use all of Mythica knowledge that exists in our people right now currently, pull in the open stuff, and start to really make some decisions around it, and getting really strong support from a whole group of researchers. People like, in the environmental area, ecology area, mm-hmm. Professor Richard Kingsford, Dr. Di Smith around governance, got Dr. Tom Griffiths around history. Jane Simpson around language, and there's some fantastic stuff, fantastic support.
It's going to be interesting to talk to you along the way, this journey through this one, and get updates from you. Tell me, PBC, Prescribed Body Corporate, what's its role there? Is that's something that's got to be set up prior to, as the application, your title, the native title application goes in, or is it something that comes after after determination? What is its role? When is it set up, and what's its role?
For Mythica, it's we've got a board of directors that sits within the PBC, and the PBC, as I understand, and I'm I'm sort of not a director or anything like that. I've tried to steer away because I've felt the jobs, one of my jobs has been done, getting this through the consent determination. And now the rest of the family is really pitched in and supporting Mythica development now. So the PBC is the place where the land titles and the native title is held. So we're looking at it as the driving force of everything Mythica at the moment. So, and the directors are on board. We've got a couple of really key things that we want to focus on, environment, culture, economic development, social development. They're the things that are sitting really strong within our PBC as our vision and our goal. And it's the board of directors and the PBC to drive those things and to make sure that the people who are responsible for it within our people to step up and into their space and do their role, play their role in it.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, it's certainly, exciting times there for you as well with your research project and with the consent determination for your mob, Mythica mob. Exciting times.
And the PBC are really keen to be involved in the research that we're doing as well. So hopefully we'll be building capacity in Mythica Nation by including our younger people and our older people in writing, co-writing with some of the key researchers and really starting to build our capacity as a group of people and as an organisation, and really take our rightful place back in Mythica country and Lake Eyre Basin and Channel country.
That's it, mate. Take our rightful place. We have to take our rightful place in society. But to start off with a consent determination and to be doing it on country has to be a good thing. But we're just about we're about out of time. Certainly appreciate you giving us your time. It's been an interesting discussion, and as it always is, and I'll be looking forward to the next one down the track sometime in the future.
Thank you, Tiger, and thanks, listeners, and wish you all the best, Tiger, and stay well, mate.
All right, brother. Thank you. You have a great day, and we'll talk again soon. Scott Gorringe, joining us there. It's time to go. You make sure you join us for Let's Talk tomorrow.